Blog Talk Radio.
Monday, November 29, 2010, Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun, and I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. And our theme song tonight, by the Mighty OJs, is going to kick off our first topic. I chose it tonight. I try to vary the theme song from time to time. And I was going to go with Echo by Joe Satriani from the Surfing with the Alien album. But tonight, Give the People What They Want is entirely appropriate to our first segment tonight. And that's, interestingly enough, what the workers World Party has in mind for the United States of America, and that is to give the people what they, the United Workers World Party, want. Now, I'm getting over a cold, so please bear with me. Most people realize that the electoral victories of November 2nd were but a brief respite in the battle for America. What many do not know, however, is that it is a mere, well, that it was a mere 11 days after the GOP swept the House of Representatives that the Workers' World Party held its annual conference on November 13th and 14th in New York City to discuss the fight for worldwide socialism and the destruction of capitalism. Oh, yeah. The conference, called it called to the broader movement with a theme of abolish capitalism, fight for a socialist future. And it focuses on unemployment, cutbacks, war, and racism in the current phase of this unprecedented global capitalist economic crisis, which is approaching its third year, according to the Workers' World Party. Many of the talks exposed that this current crisis has proven that capitalism, an economic system based on making profits, is incapable of meeting the needs of the people, and that socialism is the only solution to meeting human needs and saving the planet. Oh, yeah. Now, never mind that this does not work anywhere in the world. Not successfully worked anywhere in the world. I mean, some of the other industrialized nations or countries have some minor forms of socialism, like Sweden and Switzerland, and you know, a few other places, but they're very mild. There's no government sponsored socialist, pure socialist utopia going on anywhere in the world, because it simply does not work. Never mind that fact, not an opinion, a fact. The Workers' World Party exists solely to the end that it will work. Complete socialist takeover, and they start with a 10-point program. First thing on the agenda is the occupation of factories and workplaces. Let's take that one first. What do they plan to do once they occupy factories and workplaces? Are they going to run the factories and workplaces, or are they going to command that you and I work those factories and workplaces? Will we be assigned jobs and specific tasks based on our abilities to perform those tasks? Will we be paid a wage that is equal to that of the person next to us? Who's going to control all of that? What are we going to build in these factories and workplaces or produce? Who's going to be in charge of the factories and workplaces once they're occupied by the socialist? Well, they'll be dictators. But wait, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's move on down to number two. A challenge to capitalist property relations. I'm not sure what that means, but I do believe it means that it calls for a takeover. I suspect that it calls for a takeover of personal property, and perhaps property owned by corporations, companies. What will they do with those properties? Will they dole them out? Like in communist Russia back in the 20s and 30s, we'll get to use those properties, but they'll be owned by the state. It all starting to sound really appetizing, isn't it? Number three, the formation of people's assemblies that can become parallel organizations to the bankrupt capitalist governmental structures, as they have begun in the Bronx, New York, and in Baltimore. I didn't know that. But honestly, I'm not exactly sure what that means either. Can anyone explain that one to me? Well, let's move on to number four. A nationwide strike and march on Washington. Oh, okay. A nationwide march and strike. Okay. Number five. the future abolishment of, quote, the system, end quote, presumably capitalism, we will get there, comrades. We will get there. That's a parentheses and quotes and all that. Number six, moving on from America, it would be worldwide socialism. Worldwide socialism has been in retreat due to technology. But now it has come full circle and bitten its masters. Okay. Sounds like gibberish going there. But maybe that'll be explained a little bit later as well. Number seven, a call for a campaign to abolish capitalism and embrace worldwide socialism. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are a lot of countries on this planet. There are a few. Who's going to coordinate every country so that it becomes a socialist country or satellite to the overall masters of the socialist movement? That would have to be a coordinated effort for every country to embrace socialism for there to be worldwide socialism. I wonder how they intend to achieve that. Well, let's move on. Number eight, a call for class-wide fight and class-wide solidarity. Huh. What does that mean? Number nine. Our ultimate goal is worldwide socialist revolution. Number 10, long live revolutionary socialism. Yes, long indeed. Let's listen in and maybe we can get some idea.
Good evening,
exactly
brothers and sisters,
what
and comrades
mean.
And friends. I think that one of the burning questions on every worker's mind is how can we fight back in a period of permanent unemployment when every pitifully small gain has either already been or is about to be smashed and when our backs are literally up against the wall?
Who's back?
Our tactics and strategy flow from our thesis that capitalism has entered into a state of perpetual crisis. And we cannot take a single step in the direction of answering this question unless we begin to look beyond the norms of so-called capitalist legality. What do I mean? Let me give some examples. For instance, a picket line. It's not that picket lines aren't important or they don't have their value. But what do we do if we picket outside of our workplaces and our bosses replace us with more desperate workers or call in the police to bust or beat us? Does this mean that we don't have the answer of what to do for?
Yes. What happens if you picket outside your workplace, i.e. strike, and the bosses simply hire people to do the jobs that you've refused to do because the owners of the companies decide that they want to stay in business rather than be extorted by unreasonable, most of the time, demands of socialist workers. Let's continue.
Workers, our fellow workers, and ourselves. No. What I say is new tactics mean that we need to occupy our factories and workplaces like the sisters and brothers at the Republic Windows and Doors factory in Chicago. Do we have a right to defend our job? Isn't it time to challenge capitalist property relations? Isn't it our labor?
Challenge capitalist property relations, meaning overrun and take over a company's property, someone's property, take it for yourself, and remove the owners of the company because they're not doing things the way that you think they should, and just taking over the company and just kind of breaking the law and just taking over the company and running it themselves for the greater good of all. Yeah, okay, let's move on.
That built the machinery, don't we run everything? Shouldn't we defend it? Sisters and brothers, we need to fit in, and I'm not talking about the staged let-off steam activities that are so often the case, but real serious struggles gauged to win demand. Shouldn't we stay in our homes and call on our neighbors to support us rather than let the banks board them up and take them away from us? We need to form people's assemblies that will be the embryo of real people's power that can become parallel organizations to the bankrupt capitalist governmental structures. And I want to add that we have already begun to do this in small ways, both in the Bronx here in New York City and also in Baltimore. And if we are really organized, shouldn't we stop work and march on Washington, D.C.?
All right, it sounds to me like there are like 10 people in the background. Maybe 12. I'd like to know more about these folks. The speaker is Sharon Black, obviously named. She's with the Baltimore All People's Congress. And so what she is advocating is the takeover of companies, land, and just basically not just a socialist takeover, but a sort of like a communist takeover where everything is taken over by the, quote, people, end quote, and the people run everything from the smallest company to the largest corporation, confiscate companies, corporations, land, everything, and then dole it out piece by piece as they see fit, and then basically they're in charge. So what she is advocating, what she is suggesting, what she is, her life's work is to basically replace our system of government with a system of government that she believes is better, which is basically a dictatorship where, quote, the people, end quote, are in charge. Didn't Castro try this in Cuba? It's really not work. It didn't work out, did it? It's not working out right now either. It doesn't work. Why would this woman, Miss Black, think that it's going to work here in America? A socialist takeover. The people. What people? Who is she referring to? Well, let's listen a little more.
Stay until our demands are heard and won. I want to say that a system that cannot provide the basics, that is food, education, housing, and a job, must be abolished.
So she's suggesting that this system should provide food, housing, and all every the needs of every American should be provided for. What where's the incentive to create, to invent, to work, to prosper, if everything is provided for by the government? it's starting to turn my stomach. I'm starting to become physically ill listening to this crap. But hey, just like a train wreck or a good car crash, I can't turn away. Let's listen to just a bit more. And then, you know, I'll go puke. And maybe you will too.
And I'm not asserting that this is where we are at this very minute. But we will get there. Believe me, comrades, we will get there. The working class has been hit by a tremendous tsunami, and it's ill-prepared to fight back. Almost every mass organization, unions especially, who are so critical to any working class fight back, have slavishly clung to the Democratic Party to the detriment of their own members and the workers at large. But trust me, sooner or later, whether it's in fits or starts, this will crumble, whether it's because of outside pressure from the community on the unions or whether it's from within the unions themselves.
Okay, so unions and comrade socialist party members are at the forefront of the fight for America and the takeover and abolishment of our capitalist system, where you or I could be as rich as we want to be or as poor as we want to be, and it's all pretty much up to us. Think about the guy who invented the pet rock, the tie-dyed shirt, or even the dude who invented that happy face thing. Anything that comes to mind, we don't need, you and I, we don't even need to have a thing. We can sell an idea. And if someone is willing to buy that idea, we can become rich, wealthy beyond our wildest dreams. And if we decide we don't want to be that way, or if it's not meant to be that way, then it won't be that way. But we have a choice. We have a choice, and we have opportunity. It seems to me that the socialist / communist / Marxist way provides little incentive to do anything, and certainly very little opportunity to meet one's full potential. Hey, but that's just me. Now, let's move on to the next topic, which is so near and dear to my heart. President Obama. Yeah, we're going to talk about that fat lip he got. We sure will. Don't think that I'm going to pass that one up, not for a moment. President Obama, but right now, President Obama is engaging in a relentless assault on our freedoms and constitutional government. The growing backlash against the new Transportation Security Administration, TSA, airport screening procedures, signifies that America finally may have had enough. There's a grassroots revolt against state-sanctioned sexual harassment. And who can blame the protesters? Children are stripped of their shirts and their private parts are touched. Nuns and old ladies are groped by intrusive TSA agents. Breasts have been fondled. Men's crotches have been patted down. Full-body scanners show images of people naked. A clear violation of privacy and civil liberties. But where's the Civil Liberties Union? Has anyone heard a challenge from the Civil Liberties Union? Has a lawsuit been brought? Has even the discussion of a potential lawsuit been discussed by the Civil Liberties Union? They've been oddly silent. Yet the administration insists that the enhanced procedures are vital for national security. The rationale, you ask? Last year's underwear bomber nearly blew up a plane flying over Detroit. Hence, everyone's private parts are now the property of the federal government, at least when flying. This is wrong. and dangerous. Airport screening procedures have been a huge experiment in mass political correctness. For fear of insulting Muslims, the U.S. government has insisted that all Americans take off their shoes, pull out their belts, and walk through metal detectors at airports. Americans have patiently put up with these inconveniences. But now, for many, enough is enough. And "don't touch my junk" has become a national rallying cry, and thank God for that. The central problem with modern airport security is that it falsely assumes that every person, each of the 7 billion people who inhabit the planet, is an equal terrorist threat. The 80-year-old Irish Catholic nun, the 3-year-old toddler, the 61-year-old bladder cancer survivor whose urine bag was punctured by a TSA agent. All of them, according to Mr. Obama, are political. I'm sorry. Not political. Yeah, well, maybe. They're potential suicide bombers. That's what the Obama administration and Big Sister Janet Napolitano suggest. She insists that we're all suicide bombers, potential suicide bombers. We're not. To pretend that we are is to engage in leftist multicultural fantasy. It embodies the triumph of ideology over reality, the deranged belief that anyone at any time is a lurking jihadist. Islamic terrorism is not an open-ended universal characteristic. Rather, it is a specific, narrowly defined phenomenon. It is fueled by Muslim extremists bent on waging a holy war against the West. Its perpetrators tend to be young adults from the Middle East, North Africa, and the most of the Arab world, along with the Muslim ghettos of Europe. Most jihadists fit the profile. What is needed is not more groping, crotch grabbing, or nude screening, but better intelligence gathering, random checking, and targeted profiling. But that word profiling, well, that just leaves a sour taste in some folks' mouths, especially liberals. Washington insists on perpetrating the illusion that a Christian grandmother in Iowa poses the same possible national security threat as a 19-year-old Yemenite exchange student majoring in Islamic studies, perhaps. Hence, America is squandering precious resources and manpower, as well as abrogating basic civil liberties and humiliating its own population in order to appease the sensitivities of the Muslim lobby. So, in other words, it's a massive overreaction. What we have here is a massive act of political correctness. And moreover, the new TSA procedures mark another major step in Mr. Obama's drive to impose state socialism. If anyone else did what TSA agents regularly do, they rightly would be charged with sexual assault. Mr. Obama has done the unthinkable. He has extended the federal government's reach into our most private, intimate body parts. Big Brother and Big Sister not only watches us in the nude, he can routinely molest us at will. And Big Sister Janet has plans to extend this travesty further by suggesting that buses, trains, automobiles could be next. Subway stations. Everywhere public that we travel from now on, we could be groped by a TSA agent or have to pass through a machine that will expose our bodies. The administration is not restricting its unprecedented power grab to airports either, as I've just stated. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano said that trains, boats, and subways also may implement the same screening procedures. If the White House has its way, Americans will be getting felt up on the Metro and Amtrak every single day. Do not forget that Amtrak is owned by the government. Morning, afternoon, and night, wherever we go, it will not be safe to leave your home without being felt up by a government agent. Things are getting out of hand, folks. Seriously. Things are really getting out of hand. We have got to put a stop to this. Next topic. A union rep calls for seizing private property and world socialism. Oh, yeah. They're coming out of the woodwork. When President Obama became president of the United States, these folks, these kooks, these lunatics, they just, I believe they felt that it was okay, that it was their time. It's their time to shine now. It's their time to come on out. It's safe. It's safe to come out now because we have a president. We have a man in the Oval Office who believes what we believe, and that is Marxism and socialism. Obama has stated that these are things that he believes in, even though today or tomorrow, if asked, he'll say that he's not a socialist. But he has gone on record to say that most of his friends were socialist and Marxist. And those were the people that he associated with while in college and later in life. And yet he'll rebut that and state that, well, I don't believe in that anymore. I have grown. Indeed. I could not agree more. It is amazing how members of the socialist Marxist parties have decided that now is their time, that a world socialist takeover, not just America, but the whole world over, is ripe for a socialist takeover. Never mind, as I've stated earlier in the program, that it doesn't work. It hasn't worked anywhere. It hasn't worked anywhere on earth. And yeah, there are some countries, Sweden, Norway, places like that, Amsterdam, that have mild, mild forms of socialism. Mild. But most countries that operate under a capitalist system are doing very well. It's only recently that we've had capitalist issues, and it happens every 30, 40 years or so, where we have these anomalies, these hiccups, where we have issues with our economic structure, with our capitalist structure. It happened during the Roosevelt years. It happened before that. It happens. It happened in the 70s. It happened in the early 80s. But when it does happen, when we have these issues with capitalism, the nuts and kooks come out of the woodwork and decide that capitalism doesn't work. And now we must enact a new system, a new way to work, where I take all of your stuff and then I give it to somebody else. We'll just dole it out. Because according to them, clearly capitalism doesn't work. So here's our chance to say, we want to take your companies, we want to take your property, and we can do a better job of doling it out. Speaking of taking, has anyone read the latest on my main man, President Barack Obama's fly in the friendly skies? The military pegs hourly Air Force One cost at $181,000. Exactly $181,757 per hour to operate Air Force One. And dudes flying all over the world. How many hours does it take to get from here to France, or from here to Southeast Asia, or here to Bahrain? How many hours does it take to get there? And then when the aircraft's sitting on the ground, the average American could buy a house for the amount of money it takes to run Air Force One every hour. Speaking of socialism, why not ground Air Force One, try to keep dude on the ground just long enough to buy folks a house and put that money back in the government coffers? Because dude is flying off every week now. The U.S. military has provided an updated estimate on the cost, first published by a taxpayer watchdog group and confirmed by none other than Fox News. And the number, staggering as it is, $181,757 per hour, I repeated it. That's the price tag for shuttering around President Obama, who, as it turns out, has spent more days abroad in his first 2 years than any other president. So not only has President Obama spent more money in the 2 years he's been president than all other presidents combined, not my opinion, but a fact, he has spent more time flying around on Air Force One at nearly $200,000 per hour than any other president. Not all other presidents, but any other president. Estimated over the years based on government reports, the independent number crunching has always reflected a steep cost for presidential travel. But the figure provided by the 89th Airlift Wing appears to be far higher than any previously reported. It was first published in a report this week on presidential travel by the National Taxpayers Union Foundation. So dudes flying all over the world at a staggering cost. One would think that if President Obama was really serious about cutting costs, he'd start with his own cost-cutting measures. Dude, make a phone call or a Skype call, a teleconference. It's not necessary to fly all over the world and visit several different countries. The G20, for example, can be done via teleconference. All he has to do is break out the teleprompter, stand on a podium, and give his speech via teleconferencing. Why does he need to fly off every other week to a dozen or so countries around the world? It's astonishing. Master Sergeant Jeff Capenis of the 89th Airlift Wing told Fox News the figure reflects operating costs ranging from fuel to engine and aircraft maintenance. Asked why other public estimates, which typically did not exceed $100,000, were so much lower, he said they were probably inaccurate. Wow. So, once again, I ask the question, if you're serious about, you're the president, I'm the president of the United States, and I want to set the example as the president for fiscal responsibility, wouldn't it make sense that I start with my own office? Dude is, either he's on vacation, for which he flies Air Force One, or he's flying around the world. This has got to be the laziest president ever. Because, you know, either that or he's the most brilliant, because he has taken full advantage of every single perk. And he is giving the United States of America almost nothing in return, except more teleprompter speeches. It is amazing to me, the brazen behavior. I mean, does he think this money grows on trees? This is taxpayer money. I just find it to be amazing. Let's have an example here. Brady used his report in part to tackle rumors about the cost of Obama's 10-day post-election tour through Asia. One Indian newspaper report quoted an anonymous official claiming it would cost U.S. taxpayers $200 million every day, a figure Brady dismissed as wildly exaggerated. The Obama administration also shot down that figure without detailing the actual cost. But the trip to India, Indonesia, South Korea, and Japan was by no means cheap. While a total by-the-day figure may be impossible to come by, Brady estimated that 48 hours of flight time logged on the trip would cost at least $8.7 million for Air Force One alone. The president's latest visit to Lisbon, Portugal, for a NATO conference would add another $2.7 million, he figured. That Lisbon trip also set a record for Obama. By Brady's accounting, Obama has now logged 55 days overseas, surpassing former President George Herbert Walker Bush's record of 54 days during his first 2 years. Obama has visited 26 countries, some of them more than once, over the course of 15 trips. So, wow. Having been in office only 2 years, Obama has not come anywhere close to the overall record for presidential travel. We must be accurate and fair. That was set by former President Bill Clinton over the course of his 2 terms in office. Clinton logged 233 days abroad over the course of 55 trips. Former President George W. Bush comes in at a close second with 215 days abroad over the course of 49 trips. So, it's a close. It's really close. But we're in much harsher economic times, are we not? Let's be honest. We're broke. We're broke. We were not in such serious, dire straits during the Clinton administration. He did a pretty good job with the economy. George W., before Obama, did a pretty good job right up until the last 2 years when things went to hell. And George Sr., he had a pretty good stash. Ronald Reagan left him. So right now we're in a much, much harder, much worse situation. So, dude, cut back on the flying around the world. Lead by example, you lazy bastard. I mean, really, Mr. Teleprompter, use that teleprompter in the Oval Office. We watch movies and television shows where the president has teleconferencing all the time. And teleconferencing is a reality. It's not science fiction. It's not just for movies. Hell, I can Skype with several people right now at once on my home computer. I mean, really? I can iChat with 7 people on a computer here in my office. All right, before we have to go, let's get to something really fun. Tammy Bruce, good friend of mine, is a radio talk show host, New York Times best-selling author, blogger, Fox News political contributor, and contributor at The Guardian newspaper. Informing her commentary is the fact that she is also gay, pro-choice, gun-owning, pro-death penalty, Tea Party, independent conservative. And let's listen to what she has to say, because it was amazing and so very humorous. Go on, Tammy. Yeah. Well, it'll be up in just a minute. She was just way too much. I tell you what, the humor, the things that she said were so very funny about President Obama's basketball game and how he severely deserved the elbow that he got, and that we had been getting elbowed constantly by Obama, and so that it was kismet, it was payback. So we don't have the audio just yet, but once it comes up, I'm going to go ahead and play it if we have time, because I just thought it was amazing. It was so funny. And like I said, Tammy's a good friend of mine. I've known her for a little over, about maybe three and a half years. And we have some spirited debates, and of course I don't always agree with what she has to, with some of her views, but this one, wow, it was completely amazing. I just thought it was great. So hopefully we'll get be able to get a
you
listen
know,
to
I'm
it.
I'm telling you right Here now, I'm not the only one that's like thinking, you know, finally, about the getting elbow to the face. I am not. Liberals are, and conservatives are. Everybody's thinking, yeah, well, the big elbow of karma.
The big elbow of karma.
Here's some coverage of the elbow to the face. President Obama, the White House tells us he got elbowed playing basketball today and that he needed 12 stitches on his lip. So let's bring in senior White House correspondent.
Yeah, let's do that.
Maybe will you talk about how the American people have been elbowed in the face every morning when they get up by this bastard? Are you going to discuss how we've been getting the elbow and we've had stitches every single day since this freak took off? And I think the question then, Ed, is who threw that elbow?
Well, Brianna, I can assure you, we are digging to get the answer to that. That's a question everyone wants to know, who threw the elbow. I can tell you that a senior administration official told me it was not Reggie Love.
Wow. Was that good? Oh, there's more. There's more. I just thought you'd like to hear a little bit of that. She interjected it. She said Michelle gave that elbow. I thought that was interesting. Who gave the elbow? Michelle. No. It would have been great, though, if she had. I tell you what, that was amazing. Let's listen to a little bit more. Let's start over, because that was great.
You know, I'm telling you right now, I'm not the only one that's like thinking, you know, finally, about the getting elbow to the face. I'm not. Liberals are, and conservatives are. Everybody's thinking, yeah, well, the big elbow of karma. The big elbow of karma. Here's some coverage of the elbow to the face. President Obama, the White House tells us he got elbowed playing basketball today and that he needed 12 stitches on his lip. So let's bring in senior White House correspondent.
Yeah, let's do that.
Maybe will you talk about how the American people have been elbowed in the face every morning when they get up by this bastard? Are you going to discuss how we've been getting the elbow? We've had stitches every single day since this freak took off. And I think the question then, Ed, is who threw that elbow?
Well, Brianna, I can assure you, we are digging to get the answer to that. That's a question everyone wants to know, who threw the elbow. I can tell you that a senior administration official told me it was not Reggie Love.
Listen to this report.
More stitches when you have a smaller.
Does that mean he can't open his freaking pile now?
With a smaller scar.
He got punched in the face.
And in fact, a short while ago,
we have scars now.
In a second story residence window, looking down on the first lady and his daughters as they welcomed the White House. And he still had the gauze on his lower lip. So here we are,
what
a few hours after that sort of mid morning. You can see in those pictures there, he had the gauze.
Oh, look, there he is. He's got a thing on his face. He's got
his lower lip. So here he is hours later, and he's still dealing with it.
Yeah, because
it's not
something
to take lightly, but he certainly.
No, it's because he's a girly man. Yeah, you take that I'm going to take it as being a punch from God. And what it has felt like as Americans to wake up every day and be punched and be elbowed by these people.
All right. That's my girl, Tammy Bruce. Amazing. You got to love it. Wow. I've got... Oh, my goodness. I got a little bit more of that, though. I'll tell you what. Here's another one.
Horror story at Charles Douglas International Airport. This time from a local flight attendant and cancer survivor who says she was forced to show her prosthetic breast during a pat-down. Her story is part of a growing backlash against intrusive new security measures at our nation's airports, and her story is also all new tonight at 11 o'clock.
Kathy Bossie lives in South Charlotte. A flight attendant for 32 years, she had a walk through security 3 months ago, which began innocently.
I was selected by the TSA
to go through the new body scanners that they had.
She reluctantly agreed. As a 3-year breast cancer survivor, this is on her last day of chemo with superstar Toby Keith, she says she didn't want the added radiation through her body, but she said fine.
When I got out of there, she said that because my ID was on my back, I had to go to a personal screening area.
Two female Charlotte TSA agents took her to a private room and began what she calls an aggressive pat-down. They then got to feeling around her right breast, the one where she'd had surgery.
She put her full hand on my breast and said, "What is this?" And I said, "It's a prosthesis because I've had breast cancer." And she goes, "Well, you'll need to show me that."
Kathy was asked to remove her prosthetic breast as a flight attendant on her way to work.
I did not.
Okay. This goes back to what we talked about earlier. When we talked about Obama and his and Big Sister Janet Napolitano's takeover of America, and how we will all at some point very soon have to surrender, be required to surrender our liberty in the name of safety. Sad and degrading comes to mind. I feel very sorry for that woman. Now, we had my girl Tammy on earlier, and she was talking about Obama's elbow to the chops, and how that sissy got what he deserved because he's been sticking it to us for the last 2 years, and that was pretty funny. But this is not. And there are those in the media and a variety of pundits that I watch on MSNBC, Fox News, ABC, CBS, NBC. I look at them. I check them all out. Who are saying that this is the reality. That this is just the world that we live in now. Where we'll be required to surrender a level of freedom. Some bit of our dignity in the name of safety. Our freedoms and our dignity, according to some, will have to be sacrificed in the name of safety. So then, those who would enjoy witnessing the destruction of American liberty and American freedom have won already. Game over. When a cancer patient's bladder bag is burst and urine is sprayed all over him, when a cancer patient is forced, a cancer survivor is forced to remove her prosthetic breast and be humiliated, the terrorists have won. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you that this has got to stop. It's gone too far. Think about that. I hope you've all had a wonderful holiday, a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I hope to talk more about this tomorrow. Have a good night, and thank you for listening.